And so my metric for a meaningful career said, can I do something that's just net positive? That who knows how much you can help people, but can I just do something that's net positive, and can I show up every day and try to help? And in one night, my entire view of that changed.
Hello and welcome to Graduate Theory. My guest today is the founder of Campus Consultancy. He's worked with more than 21,000 leaders across schools, universities, nonprofits, and corporates, and he gives more than 300 presentations per year, including TEDx talks and speaking at the Australasian Talent Conference Digital in 2020. He's formerly an engineer with an experience in graduate recruitment. Please welcome to the show, Josh Farr.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on, mate. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Your experience in many areas is so unique and so exciting. I'm really excited to dive into all of this with you. But one thing I picked up from your LinkedIn was this thing that you did as part of your grad program. So correct me if I'm wrong, but you're the grad program at Lendlease, which is, it sounds like a two-year program, but you managed to kind of complete it in a shorter amount of time than kind of the typical experience. I'm interested to hear your experience as a graduate and how that came about.
Yeah, definitely. And again, thanks for having me on and excited to chat about it. So the punchline with Lendlease is I got rejected from the grad program before I got into the grad program in the same year. I didn't even get an interview to get into the grad program. So I always joke that maybe, you know, given I'm not an engineer right now, maybe they were very correct in not offering me a role. So it's definitely not a criticism. But yeah, so I mean, Lendlease is a massive company, right? They're an ASX listed company. They're a tier one engineering firm. They've got a market cap of $3.5 billion. Like, they're just an enormous, enormous organization. So I sent in an application like everyone else does. You get to the end of uni and you write a resume and you write a cover letter and you hit submit. And they were like, due to the high caliber of applicants, we are not going to progress. And I was like, damn it, another one, you know? And up until that point, I was kind of at uni. I did everything right. I got good grades. I was on a couple of different scholarships. I had work experience. I had 10 different volunteering roles. I had a nice little resume happening. And I just didn't get in. I realized kind of as I kept getting rejected that I didn't really know how to get in. I hadn't really done any career work. I'd done lots of engineering work, but I hadn't really done any career work. I didn't know really what I wanted to do. I was still jumping through hoops. I joke that at university, you know, when you hear, you get to first year and first year is really tough, and then everyone's like, don't worry, second year, it'll get better. You're like, okay. And you get to second year and you're like, this is hard. And then people go, don't worry, third year is going to get better, right? And I was like, this is turtles all the way down. So eventually, despite all these rejections, I actually went to an engineering camp as a student. I was running the Civil Engineering Society. I was the president. We ran a first year camp. And I went away to that camp and we brought in engineering grad, who's a friend of mine, Mike. And he gave this sort of like commencement speech to the first years. And Mike is still with Lendlease today. And he loves engineering. He's a poster boy for engineering. Loves it. And he eventually, cut a long story short, got me a job in the back door. I actually went to work for a smaller company that then got acquired by Lendlease. So I was in the Lendlease grad program. But yeah, so met him, got the job, company got acquired, Boulderstone got acquired by Lendlease, find myself in the Lendlease grad program, and all of a sudden I've gone from this sort of small, agile company where you get tons of responsibility to, I still had the responsibility, but I also had the sort of bureaucracy of being in a huge organization that has, you know, dozens of grads. And they pretty much put this booklet down in front of me and said, here, there are 120 something things that you need to do to be certified as a graduate. And they said, you've got 2 years to do it. Good luck.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty crazy. And then what was your, I mean, that's so interesting how you got rejected and then you were back in there doing your thing. 120 things. That's quite a unique way of saying, like, you finished the grad program, like, tick all these boxes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it's a time-based thing. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. And it was a couple of years, but they basically said engineering is really hierarchical. So what did you study at uni, James?
I did maths and finance.
Okay, cool. So it's probably like, probably the most similar thing is like, say, in a consulting firm where it's like you're an associate, then a senior associate, and you kind of work your way up. And it's engineering kind of works like that. But say for us, at least, it was in construction, you're an undergraduate engineer, a graduate engineer, a site engineer, a project engineer, senior project engineer, and then it kind of gets a bit crazy, construction manager up, until you're kind of running your own job. So for me, I went from undergrad to grad, and as a grad, you sort of had this two-year program, but part of the program was you'd get assigned to like different sites where I was hired to do the job. I wasn't hired to be in the program. So I was kind of retrofitting this program to my actual role, which was a site engineering role. So I was kind of like playing above my pay grade a little bit, but also I had no idea what I was doing. So I had to figure all this stuff out. So the grad program sort of said, well, the way we tick you off is you show us you've got competencies across all these different areas. And because of the nature of the site I was on, I was able to tick those off quite quickly. So I just treated it like a project. That old phrase of like, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. So I just took these 120 things and basically said, I'm going to come into work an hour to an hour and a half early, as many days a week as I can. Like, because you all have days where you wake up, it's raining. You're like, screw that. I'm going to sleep in until 5 when I could actually, when I normally went to work. So I'd come in early. Some days I'd be in there at 4 a.m. And I'd just spend an hour or so on one of these competencies. So it was like, demonstrate knowledge of blank. And if I didn't know what blank was, I'd research it. And then I'd write it in my little diary. Or you had to say, for example, it would be, you'd have to have experience in, you know, to make it really simple, digging a big hole. There's not the technical language for it, but sorry, I'm gonna say, like, you have to dig a big hole. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm not digging any big holes right now. So I'd have to go through, I'd spend that morning like going through the site documents and the plans, and I'd find the part of the site that was quote unquote digging a big hole. And I'd then that day go up to them and go, hey, part of my grad program, I've got to do this thing. Like, can I come out? I know in like 3 weeks you're planning on doing this piece of work. Can I come out and supervise? You know, it's not supervised. Can I like shadow? Can I watch? Can I take notes? Can I ask questions? Like, I promise not to get in the way. I'll be helpful if I can. I just need to do it, take some photos, tick this thing off. And one of the cool things I realized in the workplace was like, people were really receptive to someone wanting to learn, and they really respected someone trying to go above and beyond. So that process of breaking 120 dot point thing down into individual days and then saying, okay, if I don't have this skill, where can I go and get this skill? Was really, really helpful. And the same thing for people who want to start a business, launch a podcast, etc. It's like, big task, break it down into little tasks, find someone who's already got that skill, learn off them. And I guess it was kind of like a meta learning. I learned how to learn. At uni, I learned how to learn from a book. In this program, I learned how to learn from people. And that was a really big growth trajectory.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I want to ask more about, you've got, you know, you're doing this thing presumably a lot quicker than other people that are in a similar position to you. I mean, how did that feel at that time when you've got perhaps colleagues that are also in the grad program that are kind of doing, you know, they're sort of going for the typical, you know, 24-month period, and here you are like smashing through it all so quickly. I mean, what did that feel like for yourself? Was there any kind of social pressure, or, you know, what did you feel like in at that stage with regards to what your peers were doing? Did that impact you at all?
Yeah, so it was really on one side a point of pride, and then very quickly I screwed it all up. So I'll tell you that story. So the fun bit first. So from your perspective, yes, you know, I'm doing this great program, I'm smashing it out. They do one of this thing with Lend Lease where they get all the grads together and we all sort of sit in a room for a day and they talk to us about, well, I can't remember what they talked to us about. And I was asked to present to the grad program. They were like, hey, you're doing kind of the coolest project out of all the grads. Because I was on Sydney Harbour. I was at Barangaroo, if anyone listening wants to search that. If you type in Barangaroo, I was on the harbour. I literally would get to site and watch the sun rise through the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Like, because it's east and I was on the west of it. Like, we'd literally watch it rise to the bridge. Yachts would go past. Like, I was on the water. Beautiful project. Like, wow. The universe really helped me out because it gave me the best project ever to realize I didn't want to be an engineer, you know? Like, it's so good, you know? Like, you know, if I can...
You know, don't like it now, then like...
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like, oh, don't worry, it'll get better when you're a site engineer. I was like, no, I've heard this thing before. So I'm working on this big, beautiful project. I get asked to present. And sort of the caveat to this is, because I broke the project down into 120 steps, like... 2-year grad program has 720 days. But I was like, there's only 120 things. I'm like, if I can do one a day, and we was working 6 days a week, if I can do one a day, I can smash this thing out. Which was driven by a strength in the shadow. The strength there was a desire to grow and a desire to be my best self, which I still hold today. The shadow side of that was the desire to be better than other people. And I didn't know, I didn't have this language at the time, but that's what was kind of going with it. So Jungian sort of psychoanalysis says, whenever there's a strength, there's a shadow lurking behind it, right? Like, it's like the tyrant king. We see it right now, what's happening in Russia and Putin and stuff, with great power. And then there's this like dark, shadowy thing that follows it. So I believe that's true for all strengths. And without going off on too much of a tangent, honesty is a strength. If you go to your local barista and criticize them for the cup of coffee, you're just a jerk, right? Like, too much honesty is not a good thing. Honesty is a good thing. Too little is not a good thing. So I think strengths kind of have this sweet spot. So I was doing that. I'd always been an achiever, grow, 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 achieve, achieve, achieve. And because of that, I smashed out this grad program. I got to go to this conference and speak to all these, I mean, we're in a conference room, speak to all these grads about my project. And before I got up to talk about my project, they had someone else talk about their project. So this was like the number two grad. And James, this was his project. It was no criticism of this guy. It was no criticism of this job. But it was a road job. I've worked road jobs before. I did one when I was at uni. This was his job. Along the side of the highway, there are sound walls. How sound walls are built is it's like a concrete column. Think of like a telephone pole. And then another one. And they put a wall in between. Right? And then another column. And then another wall. His job was to go down the side of a highway and every 8 meters, dig a hole, dig out the dirt, put a piece of steel in there, fill it with concrete, go 8 meters again, do it again. And he just did that for kilometers at a time. That was the entirety of the job, right? And you need it. You need sound walls. But I was like, I would rather do anything than do that, like, forever, you know? I just couldn't. And it wasn't a criticism of him and we need sound walls and whatever. But that's what he talked about. Then I got up and I just spent the last like year and a half giving presentations on my site. So because our site was like on Sydney Harbour, it was this big precinct. We had like politicians and sort of influencers and all these people coming to our site. And part of my job was to give tours. So I had this like slick presentation with CGI and photos and behind the scenes and facts and stories. Like, I'd given this presentation 20 or 30 times. And like, I'd moonlight off my job at work to like, if anyone was coming to site, they'd be like, Josh, do you want to give this presentation? I was like, yes, let me talk about it. I love talking about it. I just didn't love actually building the thing. And so I'd done this slick presentation. I had the jokes and the stats and all that stuff. This poor guy sits down after going like, click, here's another column. Click, here's another column. He sits down and I get up and in my mind, like, the lights dim, the rock music plays. And I just like, wow the group with this presentation. And the general sentiment at the end was like, screw you, buddy. Like, you get to work on the harbour with all this like beautiful stuff. And the upside of that was like, I love talking about it. The downside was, I was like, yeah, look at me. Look how great this is. And in hindsight, I realised there was a fair bit of ego there. And the ego was driven, my belief is, because I wasn't truly happy. It wasn't that I was intrinsically loving what I was doing, but it looked good to the outside world. So the way I compensated for not being really happy at work was to kind of tell people about it. And I didn't do it in like a I'm the best way, but I was like, look how great and beautiful this is. I was literally trying to convince myself that I liked what I did. And I knew I didn't. And so I get back to work, I smash out this grad program. Then I learned a very valuable lesson. The head of our construction site was away on holidays. And I'd like put in for this promotion, because like once you ticked off all the 120 things, you could put in to basically get out of the grad program. And so a guy came to my site and he sat down with me and he said, it was like a senior guy in the company. And he's like, so like, you want to finish the grad program? And it's like, you know, 8 months in, 9 months in at this time. I'm like, yeah, I finished it. Like, here it is. Here's a 120 page thing. Like, tick, 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 tick. I've done it all. And he asked me, he said, what's your end goal? And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, you know, like, super senior. You know when someone asks you a question, you're like, I know this is a loaded question. I just don't, you have more experience than me. I don't know how I'm being duped here. He's like, what's your end goal? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, in your career, where do you want to go? Where do you want to end up? And I was like, oh, no one's really asked me that before. I don't know. And he said, do you want to be a construction manager one day? Which was like the head role on the job. Right? He's like, do you want to be a construction manager? And my gut reaction was no. And he asked me, he's like, why not? Why don't you want to, why limit yourself? Like, why don't you want to go to the top? And I said to him, like, I've watched construction managers and I don't want that job. Like, it doesn't look like the thing I want to do. And then his next question was like, well, what do you want to do? If you're not super happy here and you don't want to go to the top, like, where in the middle do you want to finish out, you know? And I was like, oh, I don't really know. I was just like, I just want more. I just want the next thing, you know? I didn't know where to go. So I was like, I'll just keep going up. And I was just trying to say whatever I had to do to finish this grad program. I left that conversation realizing like, wow, I actually don't know why I'm here. I'm kind of pretending that I like this and I'm exhausted by it. I'm working 12-hour days, 6 days a week. Like, I'm not enjoying this. And I put in for this promotion. I get granted this promotion. And then my construction manager comes back from holidays, right? And so he was very kind, gave me a job when I'd been rejected. Like, you know, it was just so great. Such like, played a bit of a mentoring role in the early days. And he was furious. Like, he's gone, and then here's this, like, young whippersnapper who's gone for a promotion kind of, like, outside of his scope and his ranks, and I just completely broken the chain of command. I'd sort of gone, like, he employed me, I was under him, his project, and then I'd kind of gone out into the corporate machine and then found my way around it. And I just had broken all those unspoken rules of, like, loyalty and patience and humility, and the message that gave was, like, here's this kid who's a really high achiever, but he's got a big ego. He doesn't like following the rules, and he's going to do what's best for him. And all of that was true. The problem was, the reason I was doing it was I was unhappy, and I just never articulated that to anyone before. And so when I realized, like, I'd got this promotion, you know, I was teed up to earn a little bit more money and maybe get some more responsibility, I realized I didn't actually want to be there. And it wasn't a criticism of the company or the job. It was just that in that moment, I kind of realized when it's like, hey, you can have even more. I was like, I don't really want this. And learning that at 22 was a real gift because I realized I didn't have to spend 40 years doing something I didn't like. And in the Australian workforce, data from Gallup says out of every 5 Aussie workers, less than one of them under 40 loves what they do. Like, people need to know that. If you sit down with 5 of your buddies, statistically, 4 of them and part of you don't like what you do. And so I'm like, that's depressing. And when I realized that I kind of wasn't the only one who didn't love what they did, I wanted to figure out, well, what do I do next? Because everything I've done up until now has prepared me to be an engineer, and now I don't want to be an engineer.
Yeah. Wow. I think that's super interesting. And I think it's so great that you, like you said, you kind of realize that so strongly, and then we're thinking, okay, what am I going to do next then? You know, rather than, because I, like you said, lots of people don't enjoy what they do. They kind of will still just stay there and be like, well, the alternative is to, you know, take this huge jump and go and do something a bit crazy, but like, this is much safer. I don't want to, for whatever reason, I don't want to go out and do these things. So I think it's, yeah, really brave of you, and certainly maybe in some ways a gift that you've managed to realize that so early on, because like, if you find it out later and perhaps you have some more responsibility and you're doing these other things, then it's like the chains are really hard to get out of, I think, or, you know, like, following your passion has a little bit more risk. So I think that's really cool how you managed to do that, because yeah, what was the next step for you then? I mean, things are not going great here. You've kind of realized, maybe burnt some bridges a little bit, maybe by accident, you know, you're realizing you're not super happy. Yeah. Like, you know, what's the next step for you? I mean, it's like, because you could go anywhere at this stage.
Yeah. I mean, to be totally honest, I went a little bit Peter Pan. I just ran away to Neverland. I kind of didn't know what I was doing. And it's funny, this pops up in so many movies. Like, it's what Simba did, you know? Kingdom's all a bit scary. Someone comes in, like, I'm just going to run away. Like, that kind of theme of that adolescence, running away, escaping, I kind of did that. And I had my best friend at high school, his older brother and his best friend, when they were sort of like the age we were at, about 22, had gone over to Canada and went and did a ski season and just went and relaxed and had fun. And at uni, I'd worked really hard. I'd never really had like holidays overseas. Some of my friends traveled during the holidays, but I was always working to pay for uni and whatnot. And so I kind of thought, like, what would, if I'm not loving every day, what would the opposite of this look like? Like, how would I love every day? And I was like, maybe I could just go have this grand adventure. And I'd been quite smart and I'd saved up money, which is my top tip, by the way, for anyone who's not loving what they're doing. Like, if anyone's listening as a grad, like, save money is a really good idea because it gives yourself some cushion. so you can take a month or 2 months or 3 months off, and also 2 years in my case, and figure out what's next. But yeah, I kind of left. I went, well, the decision I made was I can stay in a job I know I don't like, or I can go and have an adventure, do a bit of a reset and try to figure it out. So it started by just having a bit of fun, recruited my best mate. We both went overseas, went to Canada, went and lived and did a ski season in Canada. I just wanted to go do something different and have some fun. Met a lot of amazing people. And one of the big things I realized when we were in Canada was lots of people working there, tons of Aussies to start with, but lots of really qualified Aussies, lots of people who'd gone to great unis, had great degrees, had graduated with all these opportunities, and then had come to a similar realization. Oh, I don't actually want to do this thing that I'm doing. And on one side, that was really reassuring because around lots of other people who were in a similar position. And travel's kind of like this. Like, you meet lots of people who are all a little bit lost. But the other side of that was, after a while, I sort of thought, well, I don't just want to like wallow in being lost. Like, okay, this is fun. This is really cool. But I want to do something. I want to move things forward. So after, you know, a couple of months in a ski season in Canada, we drove around the US, had a bit of an adventure, ended up in London, like did the Kentucky around Europe, like the classic sort of 6 to 7 months. And at the end of that, we'd been to a bunch of countries. We'd run out of money pretty much. And we had to start working again. And as I started to work, I'd realized that where I was developing skills quite quickly was in the nightclub industry. And my job was, I realized you could get paid to drink alcohol and party with people. My job was basically promoting nightclubs. And it was really fun. Like, I had a great time. But there were days where I'd wake up and, like, my job was to go out and party with the groups of 100 to 200 people and be the life of the party. And there were days where I'd wake up where I didn't have to drink the alcohol that day. And I'd turn to my housemates, I'd be like, how excited are you not to drink alcohol today? Like, it was the opposite of, you know, maybe a healthy relationship where you'd say, yes, it's a Saturday, we've got a great party on today, or a wedding or an engagement party, can't wait to have a glass of champagne. I would wake up and say, I'm so excited I don't have to drink alcohol today. And then inevitably someone would say, hey, there's this party coming on, you should go. And I was just living this lifestyle where I was like drinking and getting people drunk professionally for a living. And it was fun. Like, people had a great time, great photos, great memories, hilarious. But it was also kind of depressing. Like, alcohol's a depressant. So after doing this for weeks on end, I got to this point where I was sort of just like spiritually, morally a bit bankrupt. And I started to think, like, is this the rest of my life? You know, I wasn't happy as an engineer. And I thought, oh, I'll just go do the opposite. I'll just party for a living. And then I realized, oh, I'm not actually super happy doing this. And then I started to think, like, is there something wrong with me? Am I just not going to be happy? Like, is that how this story ends? And that was kind of terrifying. And having that realization that, oh, okay, I'm not particularly good at making myself happy in the long term. Like, I can in the short term. Like, I can make today amazing. But can I make months on end amazing, or will I keep wanting to leave? And it's like, how long can this go for? So yeah, I was kind of stuck in London running pub crawls, feeling a little bit lost.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question to ask, is like, you know, are you not enjoying what you're doing because you just don't like it, or, you know, can you just like, are you just not appreciating like things for what they are almost, and is anything going to fill that, or is that just the way things are? I think that's interesting. But what did you do then? Because, like, you know, you're kind of faced with it's almost like sad, like reality slapping you in the face, like, hey, you know, you're not going to like anything. Life isn't that great, you know. It's kind of sad when you look at it. But, like, you know, what was your, how did you approach that then? I mean, what was I'm interested to hear how you kind of, yeah, like how you, what you did after that, because it's, yeah.
Yeah, and for anyone listening, if you are listening, one, thank you for listening. Two, don't worry, this story has a happy ending, right? Like, the reason I can go into the depths of the darkness of it all, why I can tell you I screwed up at work, why I was driven by my ego, why I was getting people drunk for a living, why I was feeling depressed, the reason I can tell you that is because, like, I've done the work to overcome it. And I think where a lot of people get stuck, and I did this in a future job, which I'll tell you about in a bit, but, like, I sat down with literally thousands of people and talked about their careers over 2 years. And so often people wouldn't admit that there was a problem. Like, I love the phrase, you can't solve a problem you're not willing to have. And at the time, I wasn't willing to have any of these problems, you know? now in hindsight, I can look back on them and go, yeah, geez, like, how silly was I? I can't believe I was doing this stuff. But at the time, you looked at my Instagram, it looked like I was having the best time in the world. Like, I was probably actively making people more depressed about their lives by faking my life on Instagram about how happy I was, you know? Beautiful boys and girls, like, beautiful exotic locations. I went and bought a GoPro and that just leveled up my whole Insta game. Like, it was fire, you know? And I remember, like, I ticked over a couple thousand followers and people would start to treat you differently. So this is, like, this is 7 or 8 years ago. So Instagram's been around for a while, but it's still, you know, if you had a couple thousand followers on social media, like, that was a thing. And I'd be out on pub crawls and I knew the routine. Someone would come up to me and be like, so, like, this is so much fun. Oh, my God, you do this for a job. I'm like, yeah, I do, blah, blah, blah. Been traveling for a year. You've been traveling for a year. That's so amazing. Like, yeah, it's pretty cool. Blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, we should add you on Instagram. And I'm like, sure, here's my username. And they'd add me, like, you have thousands of followers. And people would literally treat you differently because of these followers, which were just people who I was, like, faking my life. Like, that was real. It was my life. The problem, and it wasn't fake. It was real, but it wasn't the entire truth. You know, it was like, someone said to me once, look through someone's Instagram account and look at what percentage of the time they're smiling, and it's nearly 100%. And you look at someone's normal life, it's like, no one's walking around like this all day. Your face, it hurt. Yeah. You know? It's a part of life. But I was projecting that, and I was trying to convince myself I was happy, you know? Like, and so, I get stuck here, I realize this kind of isn't working, and I had to figure out what to do, and one of the things I've been really lucky, and I think, like, I'm a slow learner. I've been gifted in life by, like, really good opportunities. And just completely coincidentally, a guy who I was doing engineering with, who I was working with Lendlease at, Nathan, who's awesome, has a really big friendship group. And he was traveling around Europe at the same time with a bunch of friends. This is obviously way pre-COVID. And he ended up in Portugal. I didn't know where I thought Portugal was in South America. And I was like, dude, I'm not catching a plane from London. Yeah. South. Like, Portugal is an hour away from you in a plane. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I'm so, no idea, right? Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So I jump on, like, a $50 Ryanair flight. It's a super cheap international flight out of London. I go down to Portugal and I hang out with a friend. And I spend some time with him and a couple of mates. And I go, they're like, oh, you know, life looks amazing. I'm like, yeah, it kind of is. But I'm kind of getting sick of this whole partying everyday thing. And long story short, when I'm in Portugal, I decide that I need to get out of London. The party scene's too hectic. Like, it's not a healthy place. I'm like, I'm going to move to a little beachside town and I'm going to set up there. So while I'm in Portugal, I get it. We're walking to the beach. I pull into a hostel. I literally talk to the owner behind the counter. I get a job in this hostel in Portugal. A week later, I go back to London because it's beautiful. It's beachy. It's not the city. Like, it's just different. I go back to London, I pack up my stuff, do one final pub crawl, finish a pool party at 2 a.m, go direct to the airport, fly to Portugal, set down in this little beach town. I'm like, I'm just going to be here and decompress. And move to Portugal, spend some time there, and just start thinking, like, what am I going to do next? Like, that was my layover period. I was like, I'm just in this little beach town, I'm going to sit on a beach and think about what to do next. And at that time, I started looking kind of beyond myself, and it was the peak. This is 2015 at this point. Peak of the Syrian refugee crisis. And so Nathan and his buddies and his friendship group by that point have moved out east. They've gone into Greece and they're heading down into Turkey. And, you know, naive enough young me was like, well, that's kind of fascinating. I've never been to Greece or Turkey. And this is where all this stuff is, like, kicking off with Syria and people are moving through and it's in the news. And I thought, well, rather than just reading the news headlines, like, I'm here, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. What if I kind of go there and see what it's really like? And I moved towards Greece and into Turkey. And then I was in Turkey, a country I knew nothing about, right at the critical point when the refugees were moving up through Turkey. And so I remember we were in cities in Turkey where the army would be going up and down the street because there were these protests against wars that were happening in Syria. The government was being overthrown in Turkey while we were there. And I was like, I'm in maybe not the safest place right now, but I don't know what it was. I was, like, called to it. I just needed to be somewhere where there was something deeper going on. And I don't know if it's necessarily a healthy or a safe way to think about it, but I was just looking for something deeper. I was looking for something that, like, was a real problem in the world, and I wanted proximity to it, as weird as that sounds. And the closer I got, the more I realized, like, how painful and tragic everything that was happening in that region of the world was. And then my question kind of became, well, can I do something about this? Like, what am I going to do? Take Instagram photos of, like, a refugee crisis. I was like, well, definitely not. I can't do that. They don't gel particularly well with my waterfalls and sunsets and boat cruises to start with. Like, it's kind of a different vibe, Josh. But I needed something different. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to take photos. What can I do? And so I got on Facebook and posted and said, hey, I'm in Turkey. This is happening. I've got a couple of weeks spare. Like, if you were me, world, what would you do? And I just kind of threw it out into the ether. And someone wrote back and they're like, hey, why don't you volunteer? I was like, sounds like a good idea. So I went about trying to find a way to help.
Mm. Yeah, that's powerful, man. I think, like, all those experiences and, you know, this is all through, like, you've almost got the sub layer of, like, you've gone to escape the corporate Australia and then now you're escaping and you're just kind of slowly going down, like, peeling the onion almost right down into, you know, real, like, serious, like, problems that are happening in the world. And seeing those firsthand at this stage as well, I think is, you know, certainly very powerful. And that, like, how did that impact you in that stage? I mean, now you're kind of almost getting that taste of, like, reality. It's, you know, like, it's, except this time it's much closer to home almost, I think. You know, what came out of that? I mean, how was this volunteering experience for you?
Yeah. And it's a good insight, like, when you said escaping corporate Australia, or escaping the nightlife, like, I was really trying to escape myself. I was really trying to get away from, I want to be happy and fulfilled. This is what I'm trying to do. It hasn't worked. I'm going to run away and try something else. I'm going to be happy and fulfilled. I'm going to do that through pub crawls. That's not going to work. I'm going to run away. So I kept running away from that. And I guess what I was searching for and what I found in ultimately volunteering, I found a refugee border crossing between Macedonia and Serbia, two countries again that I'd never been to. And one of the cool things about going to all these countries in a row, I hope it, like, people listening, like, this guy doesn't have a clue about any of these countries. It's like, I did it. I'd been to all these different countries and cultures I knew nothing about. I was in Turkey for 3 weeks before I realized Turkey was in Asia, not Europe. I still thought I was in Europe, but I was in Asia. Like, I literally didn't know what continent I was on. Like, I was just outside of myself, metaphorically and physically. And what I realized as I went through all these different countries were people are people, and people were suffering. And that was the big thing, was knowing that people are people everywhere, versus you see something in the news and it's always like one perspective of people, whereas people were rich and dynamic and generous and beautiful and loving and sad and suffering all at once. And when I found this refugee border crossing, Macedonia and Serbia, I realized that I could just do good instantly. Like, in the same way that I could find ways to be unhappy, I could find ways to be really happy and fulfilled in a moment. And this one night in this border crossing, we're on, like, the end of a train track, hits the edge of Macedonia. People then have to get off the train, cross the border to go into Serbia. And what they were trying to do was to get into European countries that wouldn't technically let them in, but once they were in, they were covered under, like, some UN refugee, like, treaties. So you had to sneak into these countries, which is wild. Like, I literally watched mothers hold babies, sneaking them across borders, which in Australia is a weird concept because, like, we're an island, so it doesn't really happen. But imagine between Queensland and New South Wales, if there was, like, barbed wire fences and mothers in the dead of night holding babies, like, crawling under fences, trying to get in. It was just insane. It was insane to see. And in one night, I saw 6,000 people, literally 6,000 people in one night, get off a train. That same week, forget who the prime minister was. This was back when we had, like, 17 prime ministers within a week of each other in Australia. But whoever the current prime minister was had announced a policy that, you know, what's happening in Syria is awful. We're going to let 10,000 refugees into Australia. I'm like, I saw 6,000 in a night. Me, one Aussie, saw 6,000 in a night. And we're going to let 10,000 into an entire country. I was like, this is a joke. And when I was there and when I was helping out in that one night, it was just simple stuff. It was handing out bread and milk. It was giving water out to people. It was giving people something to eat so they could continue their journey. And, you know, that bread or whatever wasn't going, it was literally bread from a local bakery. Everything was donated. Everyone there were volunteers. Some people had been there for months. And that bread wasn't going to last them a week, but it might last them to the next refugee camp put up by the UN. And sort of some of the profound realizations I had was, like, one, lots of people need help. Two, the causes of the social problems that we see are really complex. Like, it's not simple. It's not like I volunteer one night, I solve the problem. But the third thing was, you can help people take one or two more steps on their journey, and that can literally be life-saving. Like, sometimes providing someone a meal who doesn't have one, or giving milk for a baby who doesn't have access to it, or water, that one little thing you do could be life-saving. You have no idea. So I changed my view of, like, what an impact was. And I said, well, what if it started not being about me, but it was more about we? What if it was more about service? What if in one night I did more good than I probably have in my entire life? What if I did that the next night, the next night, the next night? And I didn't stay at that refugee camp. It's not like I said, okay, I'm going to stay at this refugee camp forever. But the idea that I took from that, and I think the idea is more powerful than the action, is what if every day I was helping lots of as many people as I can in a meaningful way, and just nudging people along on their journey, whether that's in leadership or career or handing out supplies. I mean, everything that's happened recently with the Queensland floods, you see that, people going along, and I was at my local kindergarten with a bunch of volunteers, and we're taking out books, and we're sweeping floors, and we're moving furniture. Like, we're just nudging society along in a positive way. And so my metric for a meaningful career said, can I do something that's just net positive? That who knows how much you can help people, but can I just do something that's net positive, and can I show up every day and try to help? And in one night, my entire view of that changed. And I think about it every day. Like, whenever I struggle to go to sleep, I was thinking about it last night, I was struggling to go to sleep, and I think about lying on the concrete floor, because for that one night, I slept outdoors on a slab of concrete, like, just on the concrete. Like, no blanket, no nothing. Like, me, concrete, that's where I slept. And anytime I struggle to go to sleep, I think about that. And it's a trigger for me to remember, like, how fortunate we are, how much we have. And then for me, as soon as I realize how much we have, the next question is like, well, what am I complaining about? You know, like, my problems don't exist relative, you know, like, to the problems that I saw. And that motivates me every day to say, well, what can I do? How can I serve? How can I show up? And how can I try to make the world a better place? And in one night, it was like, you know, when your iPhone has a software upgrade and it's like, bing, like, all of a sudden it can do these things it couldn't do before. Or like Teslas now, like, they update overnight, the software updates, and you wake up and your Tesla can drive itself. Like, I don't know, I don't have a Tesla, but so the story goes. Yeah, it was literally like that happened in my brain. In one night, like, the next morning I woke up and was like, oh my God, I need to find a way to help people. Like, it was just black and white.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was pretty profound.
Yeah, wow. That's cool. That is really cool. And yeah, I think so many people are searching for, or they even need, you know, something like that to just like to wake them up. And it's really great to see that you've taken that experience, you're using it, and then to have that same impact on people to try and wake them up, or to try and, you know, get the light switched on in their head that, hey, you can do something like this too. You can go and create a positive impact. You can go and do make the world a better place, like you said. And I think that is so cool. And you're really fortunate, I think, to have had that experience, because I think it's, and I'm so great that we're able to share it with people today, because I think it's, you know, it's so special to see those things firsthand, especially, I think, you know, seeing real people suffer real problems and then being able to support and help is so cool. It's great that you've been able to transfer that into what you do today, because I know that you have a massive impact across Australia with people in university, people, you know, wherever they might be, in the corporate or non-profit, wherever they are, whoever's coming to contact with you, it's great to see that energy kind of been transferred through you and put out into the world. I think is really cool. One of the things I want to touch on during this interview is your writing and the things you're working on at the moment, and kind of where that positive energy from you is coming from, you know, sharing, wanting to make the world a better place. And I'm interested to hear about what you're writing, what you're working on at the moment, and what are some key ideas that are going through your head at the moment that you want to get out and share with the world.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks for giving me the space to share it. So probably the writing you're alluding to is the sum product of sharing this stuff and these insights every day on LinkedIn for 6 years. You know, I've been posting every day, sharing something, I've been learning, reflections, telling my story. And that's thousands and thousands of posts, things that I put a lot of time into and I try to share and make practical. And what I realized after a while was running, you know, nearly 1,000 workshops now, as you said, a couple of hundred a year, posting every day, talking and writing, that there were certain things that just kept popping up. And what was really cool was working with students over a couple of years. You tell something to a student 1 year, and then you get a new crop of students the next year, and you tell them the same thing, and it was the first time they've experienced that idea. So I realized that there were just these ideas that were universal, and I've been really lucky to tap into some of them, and I wanted to share them in another format. So this year I'm putting out a book, first book, called Your Leadership Matters. And the principle is, that my philosophy is, my belief is that seeing yourself as a leader, treating yourself like a leader, acting like a leader is the most empowering way to solve the inevitable problems that are going to come your way. And also the most empowering way to take advantage of the unlimited opportunities that are out there. And so the book's broken into 6 parts. The first part's all about groundwork, and it talks about, it's broken into 6 G's to make it sort of simple. But the first G is about groundwork, and it's about understanding who you are. So like you said, sort of peeling back the layers of the onion. So I take all the frameworks that I've learned now, having worked with thousands and thousands of people and read hundreds of books and podcasts and all that stuff, and saying, here are the tools I wish I had when I was 22 and I had no idea what I was doing with my life. Like, here are the questions I wished I asked myself. Because I remember literally sitting in a gondola in Canada going up at a ski resort, and I was sitting there like rocking back and forth saying, like, I must look like a crazy person. Like, what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with my life? What am I going to do with my life? I just kept asking that question. And I realized it was a really bad question. If I would have asked, what's a problem out there that I care about that I could do something about today, I could solve that question really easily. You know, I could find a problem I care about. And so just like that, the focus on, ironically, on understanding who I was actually not worrying about myself, but it was worrying about the things I cared about. Who did I want to help and serve? So yeah, I've put the book together to go through these sort of 6 stages. And the way it's written is, any area that like you want to improve on, whether it's finances or career or relationships, or you just want to have more fun or joy or peace or love or whatever it is, it's like you can treat this book like a bit of a field manual, lots of like fill in the blanks and questions to ask, and a way to navigate from where you are to where you want to be in any area of life. So yeah, I'm really excited about it, and yeah, I can't wait for it to come out. I can't wait for people to read it and hopefully see their impact of it as well.
Yeah, no, certainly. I'm excited to read. Like, definitely. I think you're such an interesting guy with so many unique experiences. And I really, throughout this conversation, I really get the sense, like, your view about, like, psychology and kind of going, like, looking that level deeper, you know, like we spoke about the shadow values at the start and, you know, really, like, working out what is really driving you at a really core level, I think is something that, yeah, something that we can all do better, and something that is really, really important. So, I really like that about yourself, and I'm excited to see like the different places that comes into your book as well. Certainly, because I think it's a great message. I think, you know, like people can you know, lead themselves, take control of your life, and asking better questions, like the one you just raised, I think that's a really common mistake, and certainly I'm guilty of asking myself that. So yeah, I think that's really cool.
I was just gonna ask, I know as you say we're running short on time, but I was gonna ask you, what does that question sound like when you ask yourself, like, are you asking yourself the, like, what am I gonna do with my life question?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's like, yeah, what if, yeah, if everything goes to plan, let's say in 10 years time, what do I want to be doing, you know? And definitely it comes back to like the career sense. I want to be at this position, I want to work in this type of company, or I want to earn this much money, or, you know, whatever variable you want to use. And it's often not like, yeah, what problem, what is something that, like, that I want to fix, that perhaps is something that everyone faces, and something that is really important, that would actually really shift someone, you know, in a positive direction and really change their life. Because it's, you know, and I've thought about it, you know, sometimes you think about things a little bit, but you never actually, like, goes from an idea into something that you actually do. I don't know if you found that as well, but, you know, sure. It's kind of like you just want to nudge someone a little bit, especially earlier on in their life, so that then the trajectory can be significantly different later on.
Yeah. And I'll give you a little technique for that, which I don't know if it'll resonate with you or the audience as well, but simple way to do that is to say, imagine you work a 40-year career. Like, I've been running my business now for like 5 years. 5 years is a bloody long time to work at something. Like, think about how long it felt to be at uni, like working on something every day, especially if you love it. Like, 5 years is a long time. It's also a short time, but it's a long time, especially if someone young. If you're going to work a 40-year career, say it's probably going to be longer, 50 years, but let's just say 40 conservatively. If you were to draw that into a straight line and break that down into 5-year chunks, that's 8 5-year chunks, right? So a way to think about it is, firstly, like, what would I be really, not what do I want to be doing, but what would I be proud to have done in the next 5 years? So, like, pick a problem, something in the world, go to the UN Sustainable Development Goals, there's 17 of them, pick one of them, learn about a problem, find organizations, people who are in the space, whatever. And get really deep in that and say, okay, well, if I could work in this space, what would I love to do? Not where do I have to work or what do I have to do, but if I could make an impact, if I could help 1,000 people or 100 people or 10 people in 5 years, what would it be? And the second part of that is, how do you set it up so you can't lose? So yes, you're going to help people, but what skills would you like to develop, or what experiences would you like to have had? So is it an experience of travel? Is it working in a startup, nonprofit, government, corporate? Is it learning technical skills? Is it getting another degree? Is it starting your own business, like, or what you're doing with a podcast? And so if you were to look at that and say, okay, just in the next 5 years, who do I want to help? What could I learn about? Like, what could I become a mini expert in 5 years? And then what skills or experience could I have so this is a win for me no matter what? Because then 5 years from now, James, may I ask, how old are you?
Yeah, I'm 23.
23, right? So you're 28, right? So you're 2 years younger than me. You're older than when I was when I started my business. Mm. 5 years from now, you've done all this great work. You've become a mini expert in whatever the problem is in the world. You've met all these great people. You've got all these great stories, and you've developed these skills. And then you've got seven more mini careers ahead of you. Mm. And so for some people who are like, no, I want the corporate thing. I want to be a lawyer. I want to climb the ranks. If they're crystal clear on that, great. Most people who are listening to a podcast like this with you and me are not that sort of person. So if you're not, take the pressure off of that 10-year degree career thing, because it's going to change. And say, if I could have a mini career for the next 5 years, what would be worth doing? Like, what's worth doing even if it's a horrible failure? You know, so like, I went and worked in nonprofit education. Like, I was a recruitment manager. Now, I'd probably never want to be a recruitment manager again, but it was a really good 2 years in nonprofit and education, because I learned tons about ed and tons about recruitment. And so the skills of being a recruiter are really helpful to understand people and questions. And the experience in education was helpful, because then it was a launching pad into what I do now. So like, that little experiment, that was only 2 years. But if I would have done that for 5 years, like, I would like mastered some of those skills. So I'd encourage people, if they are stuck, not to say like, what do I want to be doing? But say, who do I want to help? What skills do I want to have? And then just shorten the time horizon, because it can be a little bit overwhelming in the, you know, where do I want to be 40 years from now? It's like, oh my God, I've only got one shot at life. It's like, but you've got one shot at the next 5 years too. Like, just shrink it.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's really good. Good. Yeah. Thought exercise. Definitely. One question I ask, I know we're almost out of time. We'll try and squeeze it in, but something I ask all the guests is, you know, what's some advice that you'd give yourself if you were restarting your career at the start of this year?
Ooh, that's a good one. What advice would I give myself if I was restarting my career? Maybe preempting probably that, which I just said, that would probably be it. Like, think about the next 5 years, who do you want to help? A practical way to do that is, I think if someone's lost, try to answer this question. I think if you're lost, and I'm sure I'm stealing this from someone, this is not an original idea. But the point of a career is to end unnecessary suffering. So if you're not sure what you want to do, try to end unnecessary suffering. What does that mean? Find some suffering, find someone that's struggling, find something that shouldn't be suffering, like where we have a resourcefulness problem, not a resource problem. You know, like I booked on, I was telling you before we started recording, I booked an Airbnb today. And when I logged on, the homepage of Airbnb said, you know, can we help that house 200,000 Ukrainian refugees or something like that? Obviously, there's more than that, but that was the number that was up there. I'm pretty sure it was 200,000. And so there's a bunch of people on Airbnb who have a vacant place in different parts of the world who can say, yes, actually, I could put a family up for 2 weeks. I could actually go without 2 weeks of Airbnb income, and I could put someone up for 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years or whatever it is, and I could do this. And it's a small sacrifice. My family's not going to starve. I could do this. So lots of people listening might not have a spare Airbnb to put up, but they might have a spare weekend. They might have a couple of hours. They might have $50 a month that they can donate. So the question would be, my advice to me, to a younger self, would be find a problem that you care about, find some suffering, as weird as that sounds, try to find something with some leverage where it doesn't need to happen, where there is a solution, where there are great organizations or great people, and start getting involved in that space. Like, change your proximity. The thing that changed everything for me was proximity. It's the hardest advice that I'd give to my younger self, but it's really hard to say to people, is like, I think you need to go to a place in the world where there are real problems and spend some time there. Now, there are real problems in your neighborhood, right? Domestic abuse, all that sort of stuff. But it's not like you're just going to go knocking around on the neighbor's house. Like, is there any suffering happening in here? Like, it's kind of, it's not the same, you know? So it's kind of hidden. Mm. So it's either tap into what's happening in the local environment, or go somewhere, be in an environment where it smacks you. Like, for me, I needed that smack of like, hey, there are real problems out here and you can do something about that. And it's not overly like palatable, but it was really practical. And that gap between what I thought I wanted and what I needed became really apparent. So that would probably be my advice. Be around somewhere where there's a real challenge. Be around people who are actually solving it. Like, I was just in saw this crisis and I didn't see anyone solving it, it'd be really depressing. But then I went to the refugee border crossing and I saw local families, bakers, people who had next to nothing, giving away everything. Like closing their business and giving away all the bread to refugees who they didn't know, who were from another country, who didn't even have the same religion. Like some of the religions blatantly said, these guys are the enemy. And they're like, yeah, but we're going to give our entire lives to helping them. I was like, that's religion, you know? That's what it's about. And it's just things like that, being around people who are so selfless, so generous, that just changed my perspective. So I think a version of that rant is what I'd hope to tell my younger self.
Yeah. That's really cool. And I hope people listening really take that in as we hear from you. But Josh, thanks so much for coming on today. Where can people go to find out more about you?
Yeah, cool. So a great place to go, if it's just connecting with me, jump onto LinkedIn, type in Josh Farr. F for Fred, ARRR. Or if you want to learn more about what we do as an organization, go to campusconsultancy.org. There's a bit of an information about what we do as an organization there. So LinkedIn's a great one. And if you are listening today, if you did get something out of today, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a message on LinkedIn. Say I was listening to Graduate Theory. This is what I liked, or this is a question I have, or I'm stuck too. What do I do? And I'll send you some cool resources or try to point you in the right direction if I can.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, thanks so much for sharing your story and your mission with us today, Josh. It's been really, really cool to hear about your experiences.
Awesome. Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you want to get my takeaways, the things that I learned from this episode, please go to graduatetheory.com/subscribe, where you can get my takeaways and all the information about each episode straight to your inbox. Thanks so much for listening again today, and we're looking forward to seeing you next week.